Nick DiCilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trip Tower. Here until 5 a.m. when Steve Cochran rolls in. The phone number is 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter. You can send your text to 24720. And you can like us on Facebook. That's the best way to stay connected. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. There is a film that is has been made called The Wrecking Crew, which is a music documentary about session musicians. It's sort of the unsung heroes of music. You know, they're kind of in the background. They're these really great, very talented musicians who play in sessions in studios when you're recording records. And they end up, a lot of these musicians end up on some really, really classic songs. Well, there's a documentary film about some incredible studio session musicians that have played on hits for the Beach Boys and Frank Sinatra, Sonny and Cher, Janet Dean, the Monkees, the Tijuana Brass, the Fifth Dimension, and Phil Spector's Wall of Sound. And the musicians had been known as the Wrecking Crew. Well, there's a documentary by Denny Tedesco, and they want to release it. And there's a Kickstarter campaign in order to get the final funding in order so that we see this terrific documentary called The Wrecking Crew. And Denny Tedesco is the filmmaker, and he joins us to talk about it. Denny, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
How are you?
Let's talk a little bit about how this project started. It started because your father, Tommy Tedesco, was a pretty famous session musician himself, correct?
He was. He was probably famous among his own, you know what I mean, among the artists, the other studio musicians. But he was a guy that would been, you know, entered L.A. into early 50s. And became one of the hot guitar players, when I say in demand, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, later in film. And he was my dad. And in 1996, he was diagnosed with cancer. So that's when I started my documentary on telling his story.
Wow. So that long ago, you've been working on this project. Wow.
Yeah. I like to call it 17 years ago and 30 pounds lighter. That's how I like to describe it.
Well, tell me, let's talk a little bit about your dad and some of the stuff that he did and worked on.
Sure.
And what, you know, let's talk about him.
Well, you know, he was just a guy that, you know, people assume that, you know, your dad was a musician. That's really cool. But I never saw my dad play guitar at home until the 70s. And I'm born in 61. Dad just went to work like any other dad. He just, instead of maybe a saw or a hammer or a wrench, he had, you know, a banjo, a mandolin, a Telecaster, an amp, and a 12-string. And that's what he did. He never knew where he was going. You know, he would go to a studio maybe at Capitol Records at 8 in the morning, and maybe he was at another RCA at 1, and he just kept going around the clock for many years. And they just kept recording, you know, some of the greatest acts that we ever knew. Like you said earlier, the Beach Boys, Phil Spector's Wall of Sound, Janet Dean. I mean, they just kept going hit to hit to hit. And you know, they just didn't know what they were going to. And they didn't realize they were recording hits at the time.
Yeah. And what was it like kind of growing up in that atmosphere? Now you said that you didn't see your dad play for a while, that he was just kind of like, he was just a guy that went to work. But at some point, though, did you cross paths with all these incredible artists?
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all. Like, no, not at all. Dad went to work. Like I said, it's funny because I asked my mom recently, a couple months ago, I said, you know, I said, Dad was working with Peggy Lee in the 50s, you know, in the clubs. I said, and Dean Martin. Did you ever go to the sessions or anything? She says, no. Dad always said a plumber never takes his wife to work, you know, and it made sense. It totally makes sense. It's like when you go to work, you're going to work, you know. It wasn't, you know, you're doing your job. Yeah. So the only time my mom, I was telling someone earlier today, I said the only time my mom really remembered something special was Frank Sinatra, Strangers in the Night. And that was because Frank wanted an audience. So it was like, let's get the musicians to bring their friends and family, you know, their wives.
Yeah.
So that made sense.
Yeah. Wow, no. Strangers in the Night. Good Lord, man.
Yeah.
That's classic.
You know, did you know Frank Sinatra hated that song?
He hated it?
Frank hated it.
Wow, I didn't know that. Why did he hate it?
Yeah. It wasn't his kind of song. It's funny. It's something that, you know, you're tied to the rest of your life. He wasn't a big fan of that song. And wow. then my dad, Nancy Sinatra, told me that recently.
Wow. Wow. So now, when you discovered what your dad did, when did you realize at some point, you know, when you were younger, just the kind of music that your dad was recording and how historical it was?
Not really. It didn't hit me until many, many years later. I mean, I knew he was playing with these groups, but not really. I never knew. I mean, he did the Batman theme. He did the earliest memory I had as a child was Green Acres theme. And the only reason I remember that was Dad was going to work and we were going on vacation for some reason. So we were, as a family, went to work with Dad. I must have been 5 or 6 and took Dad to work, dropped, you know, he did his work and we left. But I remember in a session watching Dick Mizzy, the great conductor,
you know,
at the time, and he's throwing his arms up in the air. And that was the funniest thing in the world, to watch a 5-year-old, from a 5-year-old, watch a grown man throw his arms conducting.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Well, your dad played on the Green Acres theme as well. That's great.
Yeah, it was, I think, one of the first songs in television to use a fuzz tone.
Oh, is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
That's what Vic Mizzy told me.
Wow, Vic Mizzy. Wow, his name was everywhere in the 60s, you know, with scores and he was a legend, absolutely a legend. When your dad got sick in 96, was it kind of an immediate thing for you to do this project?
It was. I mean, I was in film, and I had done, you know, I've been around not a while, but I mean, I always wanted, we always talked about, hey, I'd love to do a documentary on these guys. And what ended up happening was I decided to, I didn't have much time. It basically pushed me into that situation where I didn't want to have the biggest regret in my life. And that regret would have been not doing anything. So I basically put my dad at a round table with Hal Blaine, one of the greatest drummers of all time, Carol Kay, the only woman, and bass player at the time with Plaz Johnson. And I started filming them, roundtable. And that led into, you know, that I did interviews with Brian Wilson, Cher, Nancy Sinatra, Herb Alpert. And I just kept going on and on and on, thinking, oh, this won't take long. But, you know, Dad passed away in 97. And I just kept going, hoping that someone would jump in and help out.
How did they get the name The Wrecking Crew? Where'd that come from?
Well, it's folklore. I mean, part of it was based on Hal Blaine's book, but it came about when he was doing the book, and someone said, you know, he was telling about the old story about the older guys. When these guys were breaking in, let's say the early 60s, my dad, Hal, and these guys, they were doing rock and roll sessions. No one wanted to do rock and roll. The older guys didn't want to do it. It was beneath them, you know. Maybe it was a cash deal. Maybe it was non-union. Maybe it was a demo. It was lower paid stuff. Well, when these guys are breaking in, like my father, these are the opportunities to take advantage of. You can get paid, you know, what was it, $2? Actually, 2 for $25, meaning 2 songs for $25.
Mm.
It was a non-union rate. And they were jumping at it. Well, those songs became hits. Well, now those guys are the guys in demand. And so the older guy said, they're going to wreck the business playing this stuff, this rock and roll stuff. So that's where the term came from.
Oh, okay. By the way, the film is called The Wrecking Crew. Denny Tedesco is with us. He's the filmmaker responsible for The Wrecking Crew, a project that has been in the works since the mid-90s. And by the way, you can check out WreckingCrew.tv for more information. WreckingCrew.tv for more information on this. And so How many people did you interview for the film, Denny?
Well, it's funny because I never stopped. I never, literally never stopped. In 2006, at that point, my wife decided, you know, she said, we have just made the most expensive home movie ever, and we don't have a movie to show for it. So we kind of crossed the line. So we had to get someone to cut it. And my editor said, you got to stop interviewing people because you can't put everybody in the film. You know, at that point, I had Cher, Nancy Sinatra, Herb Alpert, Lou Adler, Mickey Dolenz, Al Jardine, Peter Tork, and it just went on and on and on. But she said, you never fall in love with everybody if you put everybody in it. And I said, well, that's why God gave us DVDs.
Mm.
So even today, I still interview people. Until the film's out, I'm going to interview people even for the outtakes. The last interview I did actually for the film, which I'm incorporating to the newest cut, is Leon Russell. Leon was a huge part of this in this time period, as well as Glen Campbell. You know,
yeah.
The guitar players were Glen Campbell, my dad, a guy named Bill Pittman, Barney Kessel, James Burton. You know, there were four or five guitar players. And Glen was the guy that broke out. Leon broke out.
Mm-hmm. The Kickstarter campaign has got 9 days left, so you need to go there now. We have a link on our Facebook page if you would like to give some dough. You're looking to raise $250,000 to get this thing free and clear.
And we're at, as I speak to you right now, we're at $185,000.
Okay. So
we don't have that much. It's amazing because every $5, $10 adds up. I mean, we get people donated $5,000, but it's the little ones that just keep adding up. You can order the DVD, basically.
Yeah.
It's not giving because you're kind of like pledging for something. And if we don't raise the $250,000, we don't get it. If it's $249,000, we don't get a penny of it, and you don't get charged.
Yeah. So you need to give right now. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. And also, you can check out WreckingCrew.tv. There's a trailer for the movie there, and you'll learn more about it. Denny needs some money. That's why the Kickstarter campaign is happening. It's for a great cause. Denny, hang on, okay? Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. And we're here till 5 a.m. The phone number is 312-981-7200. And we are here, and we're talking with Denny Tedesco, who is a filmmaker who has made a documentary called The Wrecking Crew, a music documentary, chronicling great session musicians who have played on some classic songs. They're looking to raise some more money, so Kickstarter is happening right now, and we want you to go there and give whatever you can, 5, 10, 20, 100 bucks. To help this really special film see the light of day. You can check out www.wreckingcrew.tv for more information, or you can just go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. And we welcome Denny back to the show. Denny, welcome back, sir.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk about some of the incredible songs that the Wrecking Crew worked on. Tell us a little bit about some of these incredible songs and the artists.
I mean, it's funny because you start playing them and you go, oh my God, you know, Good Vibrations, California Girl, Be My Baby from the Ronettes, Up, Up and Away, The Birds, Mr. Tambourine Man, Mamas and Papas. I mean, you just hit the groups and you just hit all of them. The Monkees. I mean, as silly as it is, The Monkees.
Yeah.
You know, even Elvis, you know, the Comeback Special and many of the other songs that he did in L.A. You know, these guys, you know, the reason these guys were in demand is you realize, go back to early 60s, when Phil Spector and all these guys were doing one mono, it was only one track. So you had to have all these session musicians in a studio together to be able to nail the tracks and get in it and get out.
Yeah.
The problem was the record companies didn't trust the Beach Boys to record their music on their own, or let's say the Association, or many of these groups, because it would have taken them too long. A good example was the Birds, Mr. Tambourine Man, when Terry Melcher, the producer, got the job from Columbia to do the job with the Birds. He said, you know what, I'll use Terry Melcher, and we'll just have the Birds sing. Well, Terry Melcher played the guitar, and he had Hal Blaine, Leon Russell on piano, Bill Pittman and on guitar, and a couple other guys. And he said, "We did the A side and the B side of Mr. Tambourine Man in 3 hours." He said, "Now that was number one hit. When we did Turn, 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 another one hit. It took 77 takes. Now it was all about economics. A lot of times, if you didn't have a hit, you didn't get a second chance from a label. So these guys gave them the best opportunity to get ahead. And, a lot of the groups, most of them were very, you know, God, that's great. Let them record. You know, the Beach Boys were happy for them to record. You know, it would have taken too long.
Yeah. When you were making the film, did you find that people were very cooperative? A lot of the people that you interviewed, were they happy?
Very much
that,
so.
Were they happy that you were going to tell this story?
Yeah, there was no jealousy or anything like that. I mean, you think, oh my God, I'm pulling the wool over someone's eyes or pulling the curtain back. But the truth is, everybody's of a certain age that, you know, hey, so now they're proud that they're making food to their albums. You know, and it wasn't like a big conspiracy. It's just the way the business was. You know, the Monkees might have been a, oh, my God, the Monkees didn't play their own instruments.
Yeah.
The truth was none of these guys felt any different. Even Mickey Dolan said he never understood the big, huge, you know, big deal. He says, we were a TV show. How could anybody think we were playing our own instruments?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But, you know, a lot of people, like you said, take rock and roll very seriously, you know. But, you know, forget the same people that did the Monkees albums did the Beach Boys albums,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. How has the movie been received by some of these people and by your family and your mom?
Amazing. I mean, yeah, it's easy for my mom because she cries every time she sees it.
Yeah.
But I've watched this film around the world, and I'm it's a great film or whatever, but it's the music. I mean, no matter who I show it to, you know 50% of the film because the music.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows this music. I've watched this film in Israel. I've watched it in Barcelona, Germany, Glasgow, London, around the world, and I watch people sing in a different language to their songs.
Mm.
And it says a lot about, obviously, the music, but it also says, you know, we talk about the British invasion, nothing compared to the American invasion. We were everywhere. You know, the Beatles were influenced by these guys.
Yeah.
You know, they talked about these guys, you know, being their influence, because they didn't realize. It was Charlie Watts was so disappointed when he found out Hal Blaine was his five favorite drummers, you know.
Yeah.
Because we kept hearing him all those years.
Yeah.
Didn't realize it was the same guy.
It's amazing how people just sort of take it for granted, these great session musicians. And I'm really glad that you shined a spotlight on them. It's a much needed focus. The movie is called The Wrecking Crew, and it's a great documentary. And they need to raise some more money. That's why Kickstarter is happening. They would love to have this thing released, distributed into some theaters and get it on VOD and get it on DVD as well. So you got to help them out. You go to www.wreckingcrew.tv for more information. And there's a link on our Facebook page. Give whatever you can, $5, $10, $20, $100, whatever. Every little bit helps, and there's only 9 days left on the Kickstarter campaign in order to get the Wrecking Crew up and going. So check it out, wreckingcrew.tv or facebook.com/NickDShow. Give them some dough, and let's get this great music documentary out there. Danny, real pleasure talking to you, man, and I hope you reach your goal, and we can see the Wrecking Crew very soon.
You know what? I look forward to coming to your way, and I know we'll be there soon.
Cool.
It's one city we haven't hit yet.
All right, cool. Yeah, come on out to look to screen it at the Music Box if you're going to show it at some place. Great theater.
All right,
great
I'm
theater.
Booking it.
All right, Dan, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right, man, take care. There's Danny Tedesco, and the movie is called The Wrecking Crew. Give him some money. The Kickstarter campaign has only got 9 days left. $5, $10, $15, $20, whatever you got, 100, whatever. WreckingCrew.tv or facebook.com/NickDShow. It's Nick DiGilio right here on 720 WGN.